Blog Talk Radio.
Wake up, everybody, no more sleeping in bed. No more back to thinking, time for thinking ahead. The world has changed so very much from what it used to be. There's so much hatred, war and poverty. Wake up, all the teachers, time to teach a new way. Maybe then they'll listen to what you have to say. They're the ones who's coming up, and the world is in their hands. When you teach the children, teach them the very best you can. We just let it be. Na 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 na. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Wake up all the doctors, make the old people well. They're the ones who suffer and who catch all the hair. But they don't have so very long before their judgment day. So won't you make them happy before they pass away? Wake up all the builders, time to build a new land. I know we could do it if we all lend a hand. The only thing we have to do is put it in our minds. Surely things will work out, they do it every time. Let it be. The world won't get no better. We gotta change it now, just you and me. Need a little help, y'all. Yes, I do. Need a little help. Say it, boy.
Need some help, y'all.
Change the world. What it used to be.
Can't do it alone.
Can't do it alone. Need some help, yeah. Need some help.
Wake up, everybody, to This Week on MPH Radio. It presents news from Africa and the world. We'd like to thank everyone who is joining us on Saturday, April the 13th, 2024 at 1 p.m. Either by listening or calling in at 818-337-0016, or they can go online on Blog Talk Radio and type in missing-pages-of-history-inc. Today we invited our special guest, which Sister Eugenia Charles, who worked in the Haitian, Free the Haitian movement. And later on we hope to have with us Sister Pan Africa from Free Mumia Abu-Jamal movement. We'd like to welcome them, welcome you, and welcome everyone to another edition of MPH Radio. This is a show that comes on a biweekly basis, and it's under the banner of Missing Pages of History, Inc. So like always, on MPH Radio, we want to fill in those pages that are missing for our history book so that we can learn from our past, so we can understand the present, and map out a better future. But also to take a position that we too are part of humanity, and we too have played a role in shaping and developing humanity. This is one of the tasks of Missing Pages of History, and we welcome all of you to come and join us and support us by listening on the show every other week, bi-weekly. So on that note, as your host, the voice of MPH Radio, our agenda for today will entail giving you something to think about, that's freedom, MPH Black Mini Facts with Susie. Then we have an update on what's going on in Haiti with our sister Eugenia Charles, followed by an update on what's going on with Mumia Abu-Jamal with Sister Pan Africa. And then we have some interesting information we'll share with you as we take a look at what's currently happening in Zimbabwe as it relates to their developing a new currency, to the impact of EU and IMF on Egypt. And last but not least, there's an interesting possibility where there may be something very cynical going on in terms of trying to eradicate African people on a global basis. That is our agenda for today, and like always, take out your pen and your pencil, your pen, your pencil, and a piece of paper, and let us give you something to think about, and that is the concept of freedom. What is freedom? We said freedom is having the ability and the means to control those necessities for life. That's what freedom is. Freedom is having the ability and the means to control those necessities for life. At least that's one concept of freedom. Think about it, and maybe later on you can share with us, what do you mean by the word freedom? So at this point in time, let's get out your pen and your pencil and a piece of paper. And like always, we're going to share your aspect of something to get on our history, our MPH Black Benefact for the week of the 7th to the 13th of April. At this point in time, we'll bring in our member, Sister Susie, who will share with us some Black Benefacts from MPH history. Susie, welcome to MPH Radio.
Good evening. I'll be giving you the Black Mini Facts from the PRSP calendar of 2024. On April the 7th, Charlotte Maxie, a founder of ANC Women's League, was born in 1874. Also on this day, Mozambican women, in honor of the anniversary of Joshina Michelle's death in 1971. Africa freedom fighter Toussaint Louverture died in 1803. On the 8th, the ANC and PAC banned in South Africa in 1960. And also on this date, Hank Aaron broke Babe Ruth's U.S. baseball home run record in 1974. And on the 9th of April, Paul Robeson, Pan-African activist and artist, was born in 1898. And also on this date, the African Methodist Episcopal Church was founded in 1816. I've just given you a few Black Mini Facts for the month of April.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we bring in our special guest, one of our special guests today, Sister Eugenia Charles, who can share with us an update on Haiti and the beautiful work that she is doing in her community. You're listening to MPH Radio.
Give them a sense of pride to make it easy.
Right, welcome back to MPH Radio. We're not going to let them take away our dignity. And one of the ways we're going to do this is we're going to become conscientized and known about our history and our struggle. And at this point in time, we're going to make a transition to Haiti. We're going to bring in one of our special guests today, Sister Eugenia Charles, who's Haitian, and she's going to give us an update on the narrative of the reality of Haiti, the work that she is doing, and how we can support her in her work. So, Sister Charles, we'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. And we know that looking at the established media, there are always misconceptions when it comes to our people, history, and struggle. Can you give us people a sense of what's the real reality in Haiti and the work that you are doing in our community? We're going to turn this mic over right now to Sister Eugenia Charles. Welcome to MPH Radio. The mic is yours, my sister.
Thank you, my brother, and I thank you for having me on the show. I thank all your listeners for listening to us this evening and for continuing to support the Haitian people's struggles to better economic freedom, to regain our sovereignty. Right now, on the ground, the gangs continues to terrorize the Haitian populations. Of course, they have their own supporters in the empires. With the assistance of the U.S., France, and Canada, CARICOM has now been leading the so-called mediations between the Haitian actors who have agreed to accept a multinational force, yet basically another military intervention on Haitian soil. They have formed a 9-member council presidential body, 7 of whom will have voting powers, 2 members are observers. The current outgoing ministerial bodies have published a decree outlining the process for how the presidential council will take office. The unfortunate situation is that the 7 regroupment or political parties who have signed to join the presidential council are the same individual who spent the past 3 years stating that they will not agree to a multinational force to come into Haiti. All of the sudden, because the empire agrees to allow them a seat at the table to be part of the presidential council, they all agree and sign an accord to be part of the presidential council and allow the United Nations with their force to bring on another military intervention on Haitian soil. So for our positions, we think we need to have a transition that is led by Haitians without a military intervention. So with that, we are doing a roundup of demonstrations that we have scheduled. The first one is scheduled for April 20. For here in the D.C. area, we'll be meeting in Lafayette Square on the corner of 8th Street Northwest and Black Lives Matter Plaza. That will be from 12 to 2 p.m. People who are interested in joining us, they can reach out to me. My phone number is 301-537-8162. Again, 301-537-8162. They can also send me an email at fondationmapu@gmail.com. That is FNDASYONMAPOU@gmail.com. Oh, if it's easy for people to just send me a text, shoot me a text again at 301-537-8162. And the call we are putting out is for Haitians to stand up, for friends of Haiti to stand up and help us fight to regain our sovereignty. Demonstrations will be taking place on April 20 in different parts of the world to ask for an end to the U.S. occupation. We are calling for the core group to be declared persona non grata in Haiti. We are asking to the Kenyans to stand up with the Haitian people and not be part of the U.S. imperialistic military occupation. We are calling on the citizens of CARICOM to stand with the Haitian people and not send their police to become mercenaries who go kill Haitian children on their own territory. We are calling for sanction and the arrest of the former president, Joseph Michel Martelly, the members of the elites who's been providing weapons to the gang and controlling our economy, Gilbert Bidjot, Reynold Deeb, the gang leaders, Izzo, Dimitri Erard, who was the guy who was running the Haitian police for the presidential palace when the former president was assassinated. Jimmy Cherizier, who's also a gang leader terrorizing the populations. We want the arrest of Vitalom and all the gang leaders who've been kidnapping our population, depriving them of their economic survival. And we want to put an end to that process in the country so the people can be out and go on the street freely and have the ability to send their children to school. We want to defend the life of honest Haitians who are fighting against the wickedness, disarm all the criminals, including foreigners and Haitians. We want to rebuild a legitimate defense force for the nations of Haiti. Haiti is a sacred land, and we want to ensure that we respect the call that our founding father, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, left to us and made us swear that we will not allow foreigners to step on our soil as masters or be able to purchase land that will force our populations to go back into slavery. We want to eliminate or abolish all private militia in the country that is terrorizing the Haitian populations. We are asking for solidarity from friends and countries like Cuba, Mali, Niger, Burkina Faso, and Palestine and Venezuela. Haiti needs to stand on her two feet, and we cannot do that with another military occupation that deprives us of our land and military occupation that is coming to take over our natural resources that will not benefit the development and progress of the Haitian people. We are asking for the Clintons to be judged and for reparations to be provided to Haiti for the earthquake money that they have embezzled. On April 20 as well, for people who is interested in listening to some great Haitian music, there's a dear colleague and friend, Jean-Claude Jones, who will be organizing an event on Saturday, April 20, 2024 at 7 p.m. That will be at McDonald Hall, St. Mark Church, that is 10701 Old Georgetown Road in North Bethesda. For more information, people can call 571-278-5576. We are also having Haitian Flag Day celebration, and our theme is Drapeau Fierté, My Flag, My Pride, Saturday, May 18, 2024 at 5 p.m. It will be formal dress, will be at the Metropolitan Ballroom, 6307 Riggs Road, Hyattsville, Maryland. Again, Saturday, May 18th, we'll have a special Haitian celebration starting at 5 p.m. My Pride, My Flag, Metropolitan Ballroom, 6307 Riggs Road, Hyattsville, Maryland. For more information, you can contact the organizing committee at 240-713-1631. Again, we'll have another demonstration, Stand Up for Haiti, on May 20, 2024, 12 to 2 p.m. at Lafayette Square, the corner of 8th Street and Black Lives Matter Plaza. And for that particular gathering, May 20, 2004 is really marking the celebration of the original Haitian flag, which is the black and red flag that our founding father, Jean-Jacques Dessalines, left to us, along with the 1805 constitutions, the constitution that is the birth certificates of Haiti, the blueprint in terms of how the country should be run. A constitution back then, our founding father had even put languages in terms of how to deal with people who are doing embezzlement and corruptions in the country. The constitution that the colonizers has been preventing us from implementing. We want to celebrate and honor that blueprint, because had we been following that, a lot of the demise that you see going on in Haiti would not be taking place. I also want you to mark your calendar for Sunday, July 21st, 2024. We'll be having a major demonstration here in Washington, D.C. It will be called March for Jean-Jacques Dessalines, because as you know, at the end of July, it's the anniversary of the U.S. occupations. So for your listeners, quick recap. Again, we'll wait for everybody to join us on Saturday, April 20 from 12 to 2 p.m. Stand up for Haiti. It will be a march for Haiti regaining its sovereignty, saying no to the U.S. occupation and no to black faces from Kenya coming to serve as mercenary to kill our Haitian populations. We want financial resources to support our own force in Haiti to deal with the issues that we are facing.
Sister Gina, before you go, I would like for you just to respond to this possibility. I've been reading in the press that they are now trying to find soldiers from Jamaica to come in as part of this Kenyan delegation. What do you have to say about that possibility?
Yes, so it's not just trying. As part of the resolution that was passed through the UN Security Council last year, different countries from who are part of CARICOM has, just like, you know, Kenya, the U.S. had lobbied and invested money and allowed Kenya to receive loans from the World Bank and the IMF as part of the agreement to come as the black face to serve the military complex to occupy Haiti one more time. And that is really basically coming to secure the ports in Haiti for the rice that are being produced in Arkansas and Louisiana to go to Haiti, because the people who are selling those rice are losing about $200 million per month in rice, because they have to pay the gangs in order to reroute the rice before they can dump it on the ground. So when they say that they are heading there to secure infrastructure, it's not to secure or provide security for Haitians, but it's to create a route for a dumping ground to bring things into Haiti. So as part of that resolution, they had called on different countries. So several countries from who are part of the CARICOM Caribbean community has agreed to join. So Jamaica agrees to send forces, the Bahamas agrees to send forces, Belize agrees to send forces. So because Haiti is facing with major challenges, so they are, Canada and the United States are looking for other places to train those soldiers. So Canada has now sent people to the Caribbean to train Bahamian and Jamaican forces to go police what's going on in Haiti. Mind you, the Bahamas, they are black peoples like us, but that is a country that is extremely racist toward Haitians, who are kicking Haitians out all the time, who barely allow Haitians who are in their country to stay in the country. So I don't expect a country who's already racist toward our people to come into Haiti and provide solutions. We don't need that type of racism in Haiti. Jamaica is dealing with their own challenges of gang in Jamaica that they cannot resolve. I don't see how they're going to come to help resolve a gang situation in Haiti. The budget that the that is being allocated for the multinational force to come into Haiti is between $400 to $600 million. The budget for the Haitian military and the Haitian national police is about $25 million. So if you were to do the math, divide $400 to $600 million into 25, there will be a whole lot more over. Our approach is to provide, if you want to provide money to build security, provide the budget necessary to the Haitian National Police and the Haitian military to do the work, because they already know the land, they know the culture, they can handle it. We have tons of former soldiers who used to be in the U.S. Army, Navy, and Air Force, who are willing and ready to go to Haiti to help resolve the situation. The U.S. government is not agreeing to that, but however, they want to get people from other countries to go to Haiti to resolve the situation, and then they will use the Haitian former soldiers as so-called translators.
Sister Jean, there are so many contradictions going on today in Haiti where they are intentionally confusing the people, particularly African people in the U.S. and around the world. Can you just briefly speak to this misnomer that Haiti is a failed state? Haitians cannot govern themselves. What do you have to say to that misnomer?
that is negative terrorist stuff. And that particular language is not used for Haiti alone. It is used for any black country who have resources, who's trying to take those resources to support themselves. We have leaders. The thing is, any Haitian leaders who do not agree and align with the status quo of the imperialist and oppressive system, you are a bad leader. If you don't support the U.S. to continue controlling our political process, to manipulate our electoral process, you are a bad leader. If you are a leader who refuses to sign contracts that allow the United States to have total control over our natural resources, you are a bad leader. Haiti is not a failed state. Haiti has been made a failed state so the empire can continue their colonization and dominate Haiti so they can remove our natural resources easier and quicker. Understand that every place where there is a gang located in Haiti, there are natural resources in that area. And you can go on Google and map it and look at the map for the natural resources that are available in Haiti. Those gangs are positioned in strategic locations because if you're looking at how NGOs from the U.S. and other countries go do work in Africa and other places, when gang is in an area, they are terrorizing the population. The international NGO who come works in that location can use United Nations languages from the different resolution that have been passed to declare those area as humanitarian safe haven area where the government will have no control over it, and that gives them access and the capacity to totally control the resources in that area. So the gang are not put there for simple reason. There are strategic reasons for creating those gangs and for providing weapons to those youth to destroy our populations.
Okay, Sister Gina, we're going to get you out of here after this last question. We understand also you are a radio personality. Can you talk a little bit about the show, how people can tune in, get more information, stay updated on Haiti, and speak to the issue of what can African people in this country and the so-called African leadership do to best serve Haiti today?
I think the African leadership needs to realize Haiti is facing the situation that it is because we dare to be free in 1804, because Jean-Jacques Dessalines declared that Haiti would be a safe haven for anyone who was being oppressed across the globe, because Dessalines made it clear that slavery was bad, it was wrong, and it needed to be abolished throughout the globe. And for that, Haiti, what you see happening in Haiti, once Haiti becomes a stabilized nation, we will be a stabilized nation for the black race no matter where you are. Haiti is the beat of light. So working for Haiti to become a stabilized nation is also working for the motherland, Africa, to become a stabilized continent. It's also working for us black people here to stand our ground, to be able to build our own financial empire to provide for our population so they can start denigrating us. The black leaders need to stand with the Haitian population. They need to stand against the invasions of Haiti. They need to stand with the Haitian people and support the fact that the resources that are on the soils of Haiti must be utilized to develop Haiti for the benefits of Haitians. Companies should not come to mine our resources and take it and give us a penny, where our children continue to live in dilapidating conditions, where our schools cannot find the resources to properly educate our children. Those are the things that we are standing against, and we think right here in the United States, we are facing those same situations in our local community where our schools don't have enough resources, where our schools are lacking good teachers, where hospitals in our what they call the impoverished communities are being privatized or completely removed, where we have to go far away to get a good hospital. So the struggles that the Haitian populations are facing are not any different from the struggle that we are facing in the ghettos here in America. The guns that are killing our children in our neighborhoods here in the ghetto is also the same weapons that is killing the Haitian populations in Haiti. We as a people, we are dealing with the same complex issues, and we need to ensure that we stop the empire at its core to prevent it from continue to killing and enslave our children. My radio show is airs on WPFW 89.3 FM. I am on every Wednesday from 7 to 8 p.m. and people can visit WRG, click on Listen Live to listen to my program. If you want to listen to my past program, you can go on the website, WPFWFM.org. Go to the archive and select KonbitLakai, that is KonbitLakai. KonbitLakai, we've been on the show for over 40 years, and I've been with the program for about 22 years or so.
Longevity is very important. You know, it's your way into our people history books. So, Sister Eugenia Charles, in closing out again, how can we get in touch with you, and how can the people support your work?
Reach out to me, 301-537-8162, 301-537-8162. Come out on April 20 from 12 to 2 p.m. We'll be at Lafayette Park, the corner of H Street Northwest and Black Lives Matter Plaza.
And on that note, we'd like to thank our sister, Eugenia Charles, for giving us an update on the current reality of Haiti, and we'd like to thank her for being an advocate and being a positive symbol of resistance. And my sister, we'd like to thank you for helping us to fill in this missing pages of history today. And we want to let you know that anytime when you need to get information out that's important to our people and what's going on in Haiti, feel free to come to MPH Radio, because this particular institution was made for you and our people. So again, my sister, we'd like to thank you for sharing your story, our story, as relates to the current reality in Haiti.
Yes, indeed. It is our story, and we need to make the change that will impact the future of our children, so we can no longer be called a poor nation or a people who cannot govern ourselves, because we are geniuses, we are kings and queens, we are prince and princesses. We can do better than that. And I thank you for your time. Thank you for the great work you do with all of your team. Have a great weekend.
And you do the same. That was Sister Eugenia Charles, a revolutionary struggle who went in the Haitian movement and the whole Pan-African movement in terms of freeing all African people. So what we're going to do right now, we're going to take a break, a station break, and when we come back, we hope to have with us Sister Pan-Africa, who will talk about and give us an update on the Free Abu Jamal movement. And when we come back, we want you to get involved. You can do that by calling 818-337-0016. We can fill in these pages, because once we learn that history, there are no force on this earth that will be able to stop our people from getting their freedom and liberation. So let's set the station break right now. You're listening to MPH Radio. We'll be right back.
Tennessee. Lord, I've really been real stressed. Down and out, losing ground. Although I am black and brown. Problems got me pessimistic. Brothers and sisters keep messing up. Why does it have to be so damn tough? I don't know where I can go to let these ghosts out of my skull. My grandma passed, my brother's gone. I never at once felt so alone. I know you're supposed to be my steering wheel, not just my spare tire. But Lord, I ask you to be my guiding force and truth. Some
Yeah.
Lord, it's obvious we got a relationship, talking to each other every night and day. Although you're superior over me, we talk to each other in a friendship way. Then out of nowhere, you tell me to break out of the country and into more countries. Fast I burst into Richmond, where the ghosts of childhood haunts me. Walk the road my forefathers walked, climb the trees my forefathers hung from. Ask those trees for all their wisdom. They tell me my ears are so young. Go back to whence you came, my family tree, my family name. For some strange reason it had to be, he guided me to Tennessee.
Down to Holly Springs. Razadon and Baba, they went down to Peace Street. Headliner, I challenge you to a game of horseshoes. A game of horseshoes!
Now I see the importance of history. While my people be in the mess that they be, many journeys to freedom made in vain by brothers on the corner playing ghetto games. I ask you, Lord, why you enlighten me without the enlightenment of all my folks. He said, cause I set myself on a quest for truth, and he was there to quench my thirst. But I am still thirsty. Lord, allow me to drink some more. He said, what I am searching for are the answers to all which are in front of me. The ultimate truth started to get blurry. For some strange reason, it had to be. It was all a dream about Tennessee.
We'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio. We're going to make our transition now to our sister Pan Africa, who worked with the Feed My Meal movement. She's going to give us an update, and we're going to have some discussion with her on this particular issue. And like we said, our theme today is news from Africa and abroad. We just left Haiti. Now we're coming back to this dungeon where we live. Sister Pam Africa, we're going to welcome her to Missing Pages of History. And she can talk a little bit about and give us an update on the present status of our struggle to free Brother Mumia. Sister Pam, we'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. And can you just give us an update? What's going on in the struggle to free our Brother Mumia Abu Jamal? The mic is yours, Sister Pam.
Okay, thanks, Russ. I'm sorry I'm late. I'm involved in a demonstration where at the University of Penn they're building 100 robot dogs and with machine guns on the side, and they're sending them to Israel to use in Gaza. So, you know, that's what, you know, and I'm still in the car in the demonstration. And but April the 24th.
Hey, Sister Pam, can
you hear
stop
me?
You for 1 second? Yes, we can. We can hear you. You said something really important. I want to make sure our listening audience heard what you said. They are building what and doing what for Israel?
Robot dogs and all that has, about ghost robotics, founded by two graduate students at University of Penn Engineering. They say the name of the two guys. Robot dogs is known as Vision 60. Having received initial support from Penn PCI Ventures, they are now the number one suppliers of legged robots to the United States and allied governments. The company has more than 25 national security contacts and sold 450 units to date. These robot dogs sold to the IDF are now being used in Israel's ongoing genocide in Gaza. IDF has fitted them with its aerial drones known as the Rooster. They contracted. Well, we're dealing with the police in the demonstration.
No problem.
Yeah, hold on 1 second. Making sure everything is okay here. Okay, the United States Army has tested ghost robotics, robot dogs with several styles of mounted rifles, such as the SIG SAUER XM5. One moment.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We are live in Philadelphia with Sister Pan Africa. They are at a demonstration live, and she is attempting to give us an update of what's going on now in Philly, but what's particularly going on with our brother Namil. So we are live with our Sister Pam. Sister Pam, the mic is back yours.
All right. Back to these robot dogs. The robot dogs can be used as docking stations for aerial drones and can carry payloads of up to 22 pounds. They can be controlled by remote operations and developed with all integrations. What's happening? We're being separated from the demonstrators because we're driving in a demonstration about the robotic dogs that they're sending to Israel and all to use against Gaza. There's about 400 protesters and people in police. So they're adding on a heavier police contingent, you know, here.
Uh-huh.
They're moving out far. So anyway, April the 24th is Mumia's 70th birthday, and he's been in jail for 42 years. And with evidence of innocence. So the demonstration is not to celebrate a birthday, but to celebrate the resistance, the ongoing fight, the non-stop fight, and for Mumia. I'm sort of distracted, you know, where I'm at, you know, in this demonstration with the police presence.
Yeah, you made it clear to our audience. They understand you're in a live demonstration. Do the best you can.
Right. So we're doing a massive rally and all you need to protest, you know, the fact that he is still in jail with evidence of innocence and all. His case and our brother Jamil Al-Amin case is, you know, two that is very similar. And because Jamil Al-Amin had a witness and a person who came up and said that, you know, he committed the crime. Jamil Al-Amin was the person who committed the crime, they said was a person who they shot. And Jamil Al-Amin wasn't shot. And, you know, so much evidence to point to his innocence as in Mumia's. Mumia was shot. He was shot by the police, but not by the officer, who was killed because the bullet in the officer doesn't coincide with, with your story, and neither does the bullet that, where Mumia was shot in the chest and the splinter of his lung. And all match with their, testimony. But during the trial, evidence that pointed to the fact that Mumia was innocent and, you know, the hiding of clothing and, you know, of evidence, such as they said that the gun that shot the police officer, and they had, you know, collected and they had the bullets for it. And but when it came for trial for, you know, the evidence, and the bullets was, you know, fragments of the bullet was missing. Now, who can take, Mumia people couldn't take the bullet, you know, part, and which was evidence. Mumia clothing, and all the night that they, that this, the beating, the shooting, the framing of Mumia on December the 9th, in which a police officer was killed, and it's clear that Mumia didn't do it. And they said that Mumia stood over top of this police officer and shot at him as he ducked and weaved. So when they have Mumia, and they said that they didn't take a paraffin test in Mumia's hands, and all because they didn't think it was necessary or they forgot, and all. But if they did wash Mumia hands off, another thing was happening very clearly. And when you shoot a gun, and this was wintertime, and the clothing should have had, you know, bullet residue on it, but it didn't. I mean, well, we don't know because the clothing disappeared. Mumia couldn't have taken the clothing. And there's so many other things that, you know, that's happening, you know, with this trial. But on April the 24th, and it is going to be a demonstration of resistance. And right now we are waiting on an appeal on Mumia's behalf before the court system. And I think this is his last appeal, whether they accept it or not. And they can turn down your appeal, and that's the end of everything. And so they say legally, but it will never be the end of our protest and our demanding and showing up front the complete set of evidence and all that shows that Mooney is innocent. There was a black judge who came in from Arkansas who studied the case. His name was Judge Griffin. And he also is the pastor of a church in Arkansas as well, a very, well-established church in Arkansas. He's the head pastor there.
Come on, man.
Excuse me.
Yeah, no problem.
Right. You're hearing some live reaction.
Hey, I was with the protest.
Go straight.
He said, "Go straight. Go." Man, oh, I'm sorry. He's freaking cops.
They said, "Well, we're down for pressure, man. We'll be resistance. That's what we're dealing with."
Right. You know, and we're in the middle of this. And as we're talking, there's several things that's happening around us that I need to be paying attention to.
We gave us a general update. Just tell us again, what can people do to support y'all, and what are some key events that need to be at?
Right. So on April the 24th, there's a demonstration. We're asking people to come up. It's in the middle of the week, and what we're clearly pointing out, enough is enough, and, you know, we want to expose to, you know, the city, and, you know, because Philadelphia is fastly becoming, you know, one of the icon places to go to in the United States. So we're showing them exactly, you know, who's, you know, what's happening with Mumia's case, the Palestinian case, what's happening in Haiti, what's happening in Jamaica. And in fact, the conversation that we had this morning, and I had some people listening about the ID in Jamaica. And have you gone over that already? I missed that then.
No, we haven't talked about that yet, but you go ahead.
Right. So, you know, I wanted the people here to, you know, hear about, you know, that what's happening here in Jamaica. I was trying to tell
For the listening audience, I was talking to my sister earlier. I've been reading some reports, and the sister confirmed as well, Sister Eugenia Charles, that they are passing legislation being forced by the West, led by the U.S. They are being forced to begin to create the so-called new identity card, new identity identification for the Jamaicans people. And one of the criteria for this new identity makeup card, et cetera, is that they are forcing the Jamaican people to give up their DNA, samples of their blood, their DNA. They are forcing them to get their fingerprints up, their footprints. They are forcing them to give up their pictures of their eyelid where they can be identified. Everything they can find to make up what is your biological makeup, you have to give that up so they can properly monitor you and identify you in the future. And if you refuse to do it, some of the penalties are, one, you may be fined up to over $100,000. You may go to jail. It will become very difficult for you to work, become very difficult for you to even go to the store, make groceries. They got all of these basic human being things that you need in order to exist that you will be denied to if you don't give up all of these freedoms, all of these personalized information on you and who you are. So many people feel that this is a testing case. If they can establish that procedure, no makeups in Jamaica, you begin to see other governments applying this all around the world, particularly when it comes to African people. The question becomes, will the people resist against it? It is my understanding some of the other countries, they attempted to do it, and the folks fought against it. But these countries, I believe, were countries that are more dominated by European population than Africans. So anyway, that is something that's going on in this world that people need to be aware of, that you make family in your own backyard.
Right. So and, you know, the fact, right. You know, they're starting that there, and all, but it's not going to be but a minute unless we stand up and resist what's happening there so it don't come here and make for aware. And because everything that, you know, that's messed up that they do, it always come here. Just like these robotic dogs, it's not just for them because people are resisting everywhere. And they don't have control over things the way, you know, they want it to be. Like here in Philadelphia, I don't know whether they're doing it, you know, in other states or not. And you do not have to, you can have a GED to join a police force, starting at $65,000 a year, $2,000 bonus, and when you accept it, you know, into there. And every 2 years, a pay hike. And at this time, it's the same way how they recruit people. They, you know, create more poverty, more crime, and people are, you know, fearing to go into the service. They're trying to get money anywhere. And money is in prisons. And, so, you know, people got to be aware of, you know, what is going on here. That, you know, and a lot of, you know, children, you know, because, I mean, their ages for becoming a police officer, I don't remember whether it was 18 up, and or 21, and or, you know, the mod squad and stuff, you know, and people who resist the tyranny of this government is the big target. And that's what, you know, all this, you know, heavy artillery and prisons and things is coming up, and because of people resisting, and finding out that this government, and I'm talking about, you know, people of all hues finding out, that they're just pawns, that big business use to keep us fighting each other, those who have what they think is some money, against those who don't have. And quickly, fastly, every day, they're taking more and more monies away, closing down more jobs because the person who someday knows at, you know, homelessness, the person who thumbed their nose and said, you know, you can get a job, and, you know, there's plenty of jobs out here. Yeah, you know, if you want to work 3 and 4 jobs in order to get one paycheck to be able to pay your rent, you know, you can't pay rent. You, if you pay your rent, you got to pay your gas, your electric. You're always skipping from one, you know, thing to, you know, another. You can't have, like, a side hustle like people used to have, you know, vending. Vending is so daggone expensive now, and selling food. In order to get food on a restaurant, you know, be able to have a license for a restaurant with food, you have to, be damn near, you know, rich. And then the conditions that they put on, they create the poverty. They create the poverty. Brother,
it creates poverty, and also, Sister Pam, what it does is create conditions where they begin to make you respond in a way where they can label you as a criminal. Because people need basic necessities to survive. So if you deny them their necessities, they have to do what they have to do in order to survive. So this is the game that has been played on us, and these are different kinds of strategies of warfare. People got to understand we are at war, and it comes in different forms.
Right. And, you know, this new phenomenon that they have going down, and our children, 13, 14, I don't know whether it's happening there or not, but every day, you know, it's where children, 13 and 14, did you hear about on the ID the other day? The masjid here in Philadelphia?
We heard about it somewhat in the media, but we're not quite sure. We miss the media to tell you the truth. So if you have something you want to share with the listening audience on that, feel free to do so.
Right. Well, you know, this was done by 14-year-old, a 15-year-old, and I think two of them were 16 or 17 and one that was 20. And the week before, I mean, and there was thousands of people out there at the end, and are celebrating beautiful day, and this shooting erupts, and you know, luckily, you know, people wasn't killed, and but I'm looking again at the ages of what it, you know, who the criminals are, you know, in this, and which also I think is you know, victims, and you know, people could, I'm saying this is what I think, and because I'm looking at this. Anytime, all the crime here in Philadelphia, every day you pick up the paper, they're 13, they're 14, they're 15, and all, you know, with guns and doing, you know, shooting up at schools and all, shooting, you know, with children are coming out, you know, catching the bus and things like this. These are children. Where is this mentality coming from that 13, 14, and 15-year-old children are now the ones that are shooting up and killing, you know, in our streets. And, you know, people are, you know, calling for, you know, these children, you know, monsters, you know, so forth and so on, you know. And I'm saying, again, this is me. Nobody else, you know, said this to me. And I know how these people program. How is it that all of a sudden, these are the age range of these, you know, mass shootings of children. Children shooting, you know, adults and, you know, this madness between 13 and where are they getting these guns from? And people say, well, you know, it's parents that, you know, don't care about their children. That is not true. A lot of these children come from, you know, very nice homes. And some children come from very nice homes where the poverty level is low. And, you know, I think that we need to look at the commonality of what is happening with these children at this age that's causing them, and to go out and kill. This stuff isn't natural.
Super, you know, they can engineer. You know, they can engineer situations where they can get people to respond in different kind of ways. In terms of listening to you, one of the things I'm just thinking about is that most in the past that seem to be in the media, most mass shootings that were done in schools by young folks seemed to be of European youth and not African youth. Now it seems like now when you look at the media, it's taking place among the African youth. So I'm just wondering in terms of, you know, if this is something that may have been created to change the narrative, because normally when we talk about mass shooting, normally you see that in the European community, not the African community. Your response?
I'm looking at you know, looking at that, and because all of a sudden here we are, but you know, and people is acting as if you know all these black kids are this and that, and they forgetting that these children from these white communities where they have money and stuff, that they're the ones that's, you know, going in there and shooting up, you know, the whole school and all, you know, mass murder, kind of stuff. So it's not a black problem and all, you know, it's a problem that, you know, we've seen there first and all, but now it has, come into our community. And I really, truly believe that this is some kind of, I don't know how they're doing it, this mind control and all. Well, you know, they're taught and all, and parents buy these children these games where it's just mass murder. All you see is mass murder. The dad going, videos and all shows mass murders. That's all you get all day long, on the thing, and glorifying and children that's caught up in drug thing, and it's sort of glorified, on these channels. But I'm saying, majority of times, parents don't know what their children is listening to, who is teaching their children, and the monster that we were trying to protect our children from, we bring them into our homes. We buy them and we pay damn big money to bring this insanity in there. Someone teaching our children that we don't know who they are, where they come from. Half the time you don't even know who your kids are talking to, who, all of a sudden they had these friends.
Okay, Sister Pam, we're going to be closing out this segment. We want you to, again, tell us some update events that are going on around Mumia, and how can the people support your work?
These events for Mumia's 27th year of resistance, 42 years in prison and resistance, and are going on in California. They're going on in Mexico. They're going on around the world. Ours is in Philadelphia, and it's going to be April the 24th. It's going to start at the southeast side of City Hall at the Cato statue, and right across from the DA's office, which we'll mark is several petitions that were sent in from France and other countries, and to be delivered to the governor at 6 o'clock. There's an evening program that be happening at 10th and South, where there will be speakers and solidarity statements and an organizing, meeting on, what our next step is, and where people are coming together and find out what they can do in their cities and things.
So how can they support you, Sister Pam, get in touch with you?
Okay. Mobilization number 4 for Mumia, and you can call that, and Pain to Bring Mumia Home is another site where you can go to get information at, and come spread the word, because they got to see that we're not sitting by taking it. And we're going to disrupt, and especially if they turn this appeal be turned down, it's going to be constant protest. We done been to judges' homes, we done been to DA's homes and things, and like I'm saying, we just not going to sit by and allow them to do what they want to do with Mumia, Jamil Alameen, and all the other political prisoners. So again, that's Wednesday, April the 24th in Philadelphia. My number is 267-760-7344. People can call for more information.
Yeah, Sister Pam,
and keep
like
these radio shows going. Keep these radio shows going. Do whatever you can to keep this radio station on because it is really, really needed.
All right, Sister Pam, we'd like to thank you for giving us the update and filling our missing page of history as it relates to the ongoing struggle to free our brother Neil. And like always, anytime anything new develops, feel free to give us a call. This radio station is for the people, and we are here for all of us in the community. We're
thank
trying
you.
To make a better humanity for all mankind. So, sister, we'd like to thank you for filling in our missing page of history today. We thank you very much for your contribution to today's program.
Thank you. The police separated us from the demonstration. That's why you don't hear any more of that. Talk to
no
you
problem.
Soon. Thanks.
So we'll stay in touch, my sister. To everybody, hello from MPS Radio, and the struggle continues. You were just listening to Sister Pan Africa, who's been in the Freedom Meal movement for many, many years. She has just gave us an update on where they are in terms of the work around the meal freedom. And as we say, our theme today is news from Africa and abroad. What we're going to do is take a quick station break, and after the station break, you're going to hear a pronouncement of a new decision that has been made in Zimbabwe as it relates to Zimbabwe creating a new currency. We'll listen to that, and then when we come back, this is the first part of a two-part series, News from Africa and Abroad. We will open up our microphone based upon what has been discussed so far today around the issue around Haiti, around the issue around Munir, around the issue of Zimbabwe. Why is there a need to create a new currency? We will have those discussions when we come back. Our phone lines will be open. You can call 818-337-0016. And we will have these discussions, and we'll close the program out as usual in terms of a message from Alex Joyner and how you can support MPH. So let's have a station break, and following the station break, please listen very carefully about what's going on in Zimbabwe as they are attempting to create a new currency. This is MPH Radio.
You'll find sometimes you know where you are, but not where you want to be. Just take your time, really pace yourself, have a little bit of faith in you. You'll find, you know, and then you don't. You'll find that you feel it, and then you don't. It's only the beginning.
Just the way you are.
We welcome you back to MPH Radio. You're listening to My Africa, Air Africa. Today's theme is from Africa and abroad. Right now, we're going to go to Zimbabwe and talk about what's going on in Zimbabwe. They are talking about creating a new currency. We want you to listen to this, and when we come back, we're going to open up our phone line based upon the various issues that were discussed today. This is the first part of a two-part series titled News from Africa and Abroad. Let's listen to what's going on in Zimbabwe, a call for new currency.
Never leave your wife in bed without reaching the final moments again.
Express our views on the new currency that has been announced by the new governor of the Reserve Bank. The currency, according to the Reserve Bank governor, is backed by our minerals, our gold in Zimbabwe. You saw when the president visited the Reserve Bank, where they were showing the report, the reserve that we have, which is used to back the currency. So we put together a special team in the Zimbabwe Communist Party, is made up of comrades that are economists, to do an analysis, a thorough analysis on this new currency. There are a number of factors that we need to consider before we issue a statement. But in principle, we agree that we must have a currency that is backed by our mineral resources. In principle, we agree. We might differ, which we will explain in the statement once the team has done its research. We might differ on how this currency is going to be operationalized. But in principle, we agree. Our own currency. We agree. So the question is, at what point do we have our own currency? We are currently under multi-currency regime. So the discussion or the question is, at what point should we have our own currency? Secondly, as I've already said, we agree in principle that we need a currency that is backed by our minerals. Thirdly, we agree, and we've been advocating for this, that we need a currency that is also backed by our own production. For us to attract people to our own currency, we need to be exporting. So it means there must be production. We need to organize production. So that's our principle, just to underline this. We note that at present, which our team is also looking into, the Minister of Finance said that this civil servant this month on the 18th will be paid in the new currency. When Honorable Bajila asked the Minister of Finance in Parliament, he responded by saying they'll be paid in the new currency. We also note what the Governor of the Reserve Bank has said with respect to fuel stations that they will continue or they will not be forced to sell fuel in the new currency. So our team is looking into all this. Last night we were talking to some officials at the Zimbabwe Passport Office to say, are people now applying passports using this new currency or it is still the US dollar? The instruction, there's no new instruction as yet. We're told that it's currently the US dollar. So we're considering all these issues. So we'll then produce a comprehensive statement in respect to the new currency. So we thought it important to inform you so that you, because we know the question that you are asking us and you need to hear our views as the Zimbabwe Communist Party. Let me assure you that very soon, maybe in the next week or so, you will get our full statement on our position as the Zimbabwe Communist Party in respect to the new currency. Otherwise, have a great day. Goodbye. Amanda Comrade.
When we first arrive at St.
We'd like to welcome you back to MPH Radio. You can listen to that clipping on YouTube, title Zig, Zimbabwe New Currency. The brother who's speaking, I believe his name, if I pronounce it correctly, is C.D. Nagabutu. He was talking about the need for Zimbabwe to create a new currency, to create more investments, more trade, to have a currency that will be back up by their minerals. In one case is they have a lot of gold inside of Zimbabwe. So that is very important to see if that would be a technique or a tool or a decision that can be used to help eradicate and get around some of these sanctions that have hurt the economy real severely in Zimbabwe, as well as give the people more flexibility to develop and be more resourceful in Zimbabwe. The only question I have in terms of that is, since their money could be backed by something solid, you talk about gold or other minerals, but yet they still going to rely on their major currency of trade would be the dollar. Why are they using the dollar as a major means of their currency trade? That seems to be a concern for me. When you're talking about dealing with the dollar, it's not backed by nothing, and many countries now going away from the dollar. And you can take the natural resources and use that as a form of trade with the dollar. So that's the concern I have. But again, that news from Africa and abroad. This is Power 1 and 2-5 series. What we're going to do right now, we're going to open up our phone line at 818-337-0016. We'd like to have some discussions and some your opinion on some of the issues that were raised on this particular segment as we start from what took place around the interview we did with Sister Regina Charles on Haiti. Then we're going to talk about the squash of Mamil, and followed by this new decision in Zimbabwe, creating new currency. What y'all think about this? So like always, we're going to go to our co-host, Brother Arizona. We're going to bring him in. And Brother Alex, we'd like to welcome you to MPH Radio. There were a host of issues that have been discussed today on this first part series, on two-part series, news from Africa and abroad. As we talk about Haiti, one of the things I thought was interesting coming from Haiti was that this whole issue of having other African nations to participate in their own oppression by going to Haiti and help further the Western interests. Your response about what you heard in Haiti and your understanding of this Haitian phenomenon, Brother Alex.
Well, Brother Lee, as I've always said, you're the only one that can bring us this information. The things that have been brought up today, you know, you have to search beyond social media to find out the real truth of what's going on. And if I get off just for a second, I'm just so sorry of the shooting there at the mosque, and especially where, you know, a young child, you know, had a gun in his possession and was shot. We have to go back to the principles that Haiti was found on and why it was. And that was to throw off their oppressive European rule. And when we look at the type of government that was first implemented in the country, which stood on its own and elected leaders and did see the face of democracy for many years, even though the oppression forces from Europe and the United States was trying to tear the country apart, they have never wanted Haiti to survive because it is an independent nation led by black leaders. We can govern ourselves. You know, that's the whole point of our existence, you know, here on this earth. You know, we can govern ourselves. And not only can we govern ourselves, we can have successful nations. We can have successful countries. And how we do that is because we get some of the most bright and most intelligent people working together for a common cause and a common goal, and that is to make sure that everyone has a wonderful life, not a life in prison, not a life illiterate, not a life full of health issues, but a life worth living. As our own Constitution said, that pursuit of happiness. So I would like to go back and say, yes, Haiti, you know, needs to move forward into the light. But to do so, we have to support her. You know, we have to come up with some deep, honest solutions. Because right now that nation is in turmoil. And is in turmoil because of the gangs. And just like she said, well, who's supporting the gangs? Where are the natural resources? You know, who's protecting what? It is such a disparaging, you know, situation there that it just breaks my heart. But then again, as she mentioned, you know, Jamaica, Bahamas, all the countries, Puerto Rico, everything down there is suffering, you know, from many things that the United States and European countries are doing to them so that they can keep the economies down and keep the people poor and against each other and fighting it where you have that gang warfare and everything, just like our streets are flooded with drugs, you know, and flooded with guns now where they're in our young people's hands. So, you know, that is what's happening, you know, in our black communities. And so, I mean, today's show is just didn't touch me with so many different issues, you know. And I'm going to give the mic back over because there are so many things to comment on, so many things that you've done here. And then it is just amazing. And just to even realize that I was reading about a month ago about these ghost robots. And to have this sister there and reporting to us that they're out there actually protesting against that, because how much longer will these devices not be used against us in our own communities? I remember the gentleman that was in the tower years ago in the parking garage in Dallas, and they sent the robot in and killed him. You know, how many times will, you know, this device or something like it might be used in that effect? And we're talking about robots that cost over $150,000. So, you know, we're going to say these things ain't cheap, you know, not by a long shot. So the technology is being developed, you know, for them to go into different areas to do what they may do. Then who has a conscience behind them? And I turn the mic back to you.
You know, before we go to our next caller, Brother Alex, you know, they said a lot of times the truth comes out through comedy. Sometimes it comes out through science fiction movies. Sometimes it comes out through cartoons. So we can see today that they are making robots to replace human beings and to act like human beings. So your new war machine going to be human beings fighting robots. So this is something where they're making it a fantasy, making it a reality, and people need to come understand. Again, one of the things I say to my listeners on each all the time is we must understand the various forms of war and techniques that are being used against humanity. So let's go to our next caller. They've been waiting here patiently. We'd like to welcome that caller to MPH Radio. Caller 6057. We'd like to hear your response as you deal with the issue of Haiti. The mic is yours. On the 6057, in response, any concerns, questions on Haiti? 6057?
Yes. Yes. They are. On Haiti and throughout the African diaspora and at home in Africa, Africans are resisting their oppression. And imperialism changes tactics And that's something we have to stay on top of if we're going to defeat imperialism. And it's important that we get better organized so that we can resist the various forces of imperialism, such as racism, capitalism, Zionism. And we must stand in solidarity with other peoples that are fighting against, you know, the same enemy. And our people are resisting. And that's why the imperialists are resorting to different tactics to try to keep capitalism alive. And we and those who know more have to teach. And that's why programs such as Missing Pages of History are important to our community. And, you know, that's I'll close with that for right now.
Carla, before we let you close, Brother Alex raised an interesting point as we were speaking on the Mumia Abu-Jamal case with Sister Pam. She alluded to that they got universities up in Pennsylvania, up in Philadelphia now. Their engineers are making robots to fight against the Palestinians. But there's the whole issue of how universities are being used as a tool of oppression. Your response, how they use the technology now, how they have our youth today use the technology to mean to fight against the overall development and the progress of humanity. Your response.
Yes, that has been going on for several decades. For example, the atomic bomb was developed as a weapon of mass destruction, and was used against the Japanese, and that brought an end to the Second Imperialist War. So imperialists have been using technology to oppress humanity for decades. And the idea of building robots to use against the Palestinian people is just one example of that. And also the development of nuclear weapons is another example. So this has been going on for quite a while. And, it's important to learn in whatever occupation we are in to learn as much as we can and to pass it on to other people so that we know what the real deal is and we understand what's going on.
Thank you, caller. We'll come back with you. We'll go to our next caller. Caller 7236. Caller 7236. We'd like to welcome you to Africa on the Move. One of the narratives we discussed earlier, caller, is when we look at this whole issue of Haiti, we look at this issue of this old saying that if you don't know who you are, you'll fall for anything. And that seems to apply in the Haitian situation. The American Africans from Kenya, from Jamaica, from all the CARICOM countries to participate with the West against their own brothers and sisters in Haiti. Your response to the Haitian situation, caller 7236.
On the table. Good evening. I just wanted to tell you another fascinating, wonderful show. And my condolences to all the people impacted by the shooting in Haiti. My concern is where in such an allegedly impoverished country
are these weapons coming from in Haiti? And I guess I would ask, where are they coming from in Baltimore? And I know where they're coming in, Zionist occupied apartheid Palestine, but where and how are these weapons being distributed? And I heard yesterday a six-year-old went to court for allegedly shooting his kindergarten teacher and this kind of behavior, and the focus was completely on this black child, this African child, and shootings, these mass shootings are being committed generally by children whom are in working class communities with resources that every family should have, such as computers and internet, but that's little else they seem to have. And as for the black children or the African children, often they don't have access to those things. But what they have access to are the gaming systems. And it makes me think of Julian Assange's 13-minute video and how these military persons see images, lights on their monitor, and that's where they know to attack. And what role does Alex and you do, you think, imperialism or outside forces have when it comes to the influx of this weaponry into African communities such as Haiti or Baltimore? And do the gaming systems in the psyche of the children?
Thank you, Carla. We'll come back to you. Thank you, Carla. We'll come back to you as we continue to discuss the various issues that was discussed today on this program. Brother Alex, I would like to get your response. I was just trying to figure out, I found it very interesting up in Philly after on the last day of Ramadan, when they had all these shootings on the last day of Ramadan. I find the timing very interesting. The shooting. Just your general response to that, Brother Alex.
Well, you know, as they say, evil never sleeps. And when you want to destroy, you know, a people, because we have to look at, you know, the Islamic faith, and we have to look at the Christian faith. And it's not enough just to try and pit communities against each other, but is also to commit the religion. So when you can manipulate, say, Christian children or non-Christian children or just children in general, because, you know, that's who's playing, you know, the video game, you know, and gathering that psychic that, you know, is okay to, you know, go from, Elnora saying earlier, you can go from room to room on these little video games and just shooting people and watching the blood just splatter, you know, but these are just images, and our kids, their minds are not developed enough to know that this is a game and this is not real life. You know, this is make-believe, and it should never carry over, you know, to the street, so that when you see someone that's different than you, but they may be the same color that you are. And how, you know, are you going to attack someone of your own race? So we got to look at, you know, there are black Jews, there are black Muslims, you know, there are blacks in every religion, Catholics and everything. You know, do we not want to just go and assault them? You know, what is your purpose behind that? And that's what I would like to know, you know, at that point from these young kids, what was the idea You know, what made them think that it was okay to go and do this to someone just like you? I can see it growing up as a young child where, you know, the Aryan Nation or the KKK and all these other little groups that were had started in hate groups, but they weren't attacking their own. You know, that was the thing about it. You know, that you didn't see the KKK go over there and attack the Catholics or any other group of people. They only had one purpose in mind, and that was to attack us, you know. So that's what I'm wondering. Who is feeding these young children? What are they watching? You know, the sentiments of hate that are being implied into them to even destroy their own neighborhoods. And that's what gets me, is how you can indoctrinate our children with that idea of having a gun, that's going to make you a man, that's going to, you know, bring you riches and whatever. But that is not a power of control that our children should be dealing with under the age of, I'd say, 21. They should be more focused on finding their way in life, and that is, in some form, find a trade. Go get a college education. Start working. Doing something positive for your community. Because we need lawyers. We need bankers. We need groceries, stores in our neighborhood. We need a retail trade in our neighborhood. We should not always be depending on someone else to bring things into our communities. You know, we should not only be bringing violence in our communities, but we should be bringing opportunities into our communities. And when I grew up, there were black banks, there were black insurance companies, there were black businesses everywhere. But as the white encroachment came across, that was destroyed. So, you know, with integration, we always have to look back and say whether it was good and whether it was bad. But, you know, it destroyed a lot of black businesses, a lot of black hope. So we need to return back to that age where, you know, we grew our own food, you know, where we visited our own doctors. We traded with our own businesses, and we made them profitable. And we can also, just like anyone else, we should open up our business opportunities to anywhere in the world. As black businesses, we should be doing business with people in China. We should be doing business with people in Japan. Everywhere we should be doing business. We should not limit ourselves to just our own, but we should open up our own opportunities. But we should stand strong in our communities of what we represent and not be sellouts just because there's more dollars on the other side. So we still got to recognize that we have to be a prosperous people. And we can do that if we work together, we organize, and we make a commitment to fellowship and network together, because those are the most important things that we can do. So we need to get these guns out of these young people's hands and put more books and more education into their minds. Because right now, I think that the animal instinct that's been in man for hundreds of years, thousands of years, is embedded there. And it's just that someone on the other side just knows how to go right to that and make our kids as valid as they can be. And with that, I turn it back to you, Mr. Lee.
Thank you, Brother Alex. We'll go to caller 6057. Caller 6057, when years to come, when people look back at the history and behavior of the so-called African leadership class in America and looking at U.S. foreign policy as relates to issues like what's going on with Mumia, issues were going on in Haiti, issues were going on in the Congo, you know, you name it, when it comes to African people. There will probably be a critique such as when dealing with the so-called African leadership class in the context of the U.S., is that this particular class did not act out in its own interest. It acted out in the interest of the West, the interest of those who have power. Your response to that narrative, called 6057.
That's a direct consequence of neocolonialism, which is the dominant form that imperialism manifests itself within African communities worldwide. There are a sector of our people that work against our interests, and that is intensifying. Even though it's been here as long as capitalism's been in existence, recall, it was slave captures in Africa that sold other Africans into slavery. This has been going on for quite a while, but it's intensifying. And, tactics change with changes in technology and also as we get wise to the game. The capitalist forces change the rules on us. That's why it's a relentless battle against, the forces of neocolonialism. But neocolonialism has been around for a couple of centuries now. And it's intensifying in its impact on African people. We're engaged in a class struggle, a nation class struggle. In other words, we're not only oppressed as a nation, we're also oppressed as a class. Even though in the case of Africa, it was disguised as ethnic conflicts and religious conflicts, but they were really class issues. We have to do more to politically educate each other so that we can be aware of where neocolonialism manifests itself and defeat it.
Hey, Carl, before you leave, can you use all these big words on me? I don't understand these big words you're using, like neocolonialism. Can you explain to our listening audience in simple terms, what is neocolonialism and how does it look? Give us an example.
Sure. It's a case of I'll use Malcolm X's analogy, the house Negro and field Negro. The field Negro represented the masses of African people, as the house Negro represented the interests of the slave master on the plantation. House Negro cared more about the interests of the slave master than his own people. A house Negro is basically a sellout to our community. And the field Negro works in the interest of the masses of the people in that community. To try to simplify a complex economic phenomena, how to explain it as simply as possible. That's what neocolonialism is, a case where people work against their own interests.
Thank you, Carlos. You made a lot more clear to me. A rich Negro in America will have more of an interest and perspective where he will see himself more in line with a rich European than he would with his people who may not be rich, who may be poor. So anyway, my caller, I'd like to thank you to stay on, and we'll go to our caller 7236. Caller, Zimbabwe for years have been under economic sanctions by the U.S. and the West and Europe. The economy has been driven to the point where inflation is way out of control. It'd be very difficult for them to get resources and products in and out of the country. And one of the things the West been trying to do is get their hands on valuable resources inside of Zimbabwe and throughout African countries. Carl, I'd like to have your take on this question of, is it a good idea now for Zimbabwe people to create new currency based behind gold but still have the dollar as the major exchange monetary tool that they will use? Your general response on this question of new currency in Zimbabwe being backed by gold, call us 7236. What's your general take on that?
Well, it's difficult because as long as the dollar is based on nothing and the U.S. can print money at will, you would think gold would be more valuable, but it may not be. But you've heard about this new currency that South Africa, India, different countries are interested in. I've heard of it. I can't think of the name. Maybe if there's a new currency, it might have an impact. But I'm sorry I'm not informed enough to know how it would impact the economy of Zimbabwe. It sounds as if the Zimbabwe people feel that it would benefit their economy, that they've already done the math and know how this would impact their currency. But again, if they're using the dollar, someone else will control the value of that currency still, even though it's being backed by gold. I do not know. I must defer to your other members of your audience. I'm not qualified to speak on this issue.
Thank you, Carla, for your response. Let's go to Brother Alex. Brother Alex, changing or creating new currency backed by gold, but still having the U.S. dollar as the major currency for exchange, do you think that's a viable option?
Well, Mr. Lee, you know, one of the things that we have to always realize is the United States, just like Elnora said, that when we begin to print more money than we can back, then we're going to teach another country or other countries to do the same. That's what got Zimbabwe into trouble over 25 years ago when they had nothing to back anything with. And as of this past year, three-quarters of their dollar was worth nothing. The inflation rate was over 55%. So when you look at horrendous numbers of what the trading is, we say, well, what caused that? Well, when we start using American influence, we have U.S. Secretaries of Treasury running over there and trying to tell people, you know, how to do as far as their products, everything is concerned, to be put on the world market because we have all these stock markets. And so only when you bring your money into the bank do you actually know an exchange rate of what it's worth. And it's compounded, you know, three or four times a day. So you almost don't know from that morning to that night the actual amount that you have. Now, Zimbabwe is going to print this new currency from between $1 denominations all the way up to $200 bills. So, I mean, you know, we think about it in our country. You know, we go from 1 to the 100, you know, as standards, you know, 5s, 10s, 20s, 50s, and 100s. So when we're looking at a country that's going to start, you know, printing something, what is going to be back with, you know, is going to be on the promises of their minerals, not just the gold alone, but also, you know, their agriculture, you know, their crops and stuff. So how profitable is Zimbabwe? Well, if you look at it, it's a very rich nation. So it has the resources, you know, to back its own money. But again, it has to depend on the European Union and the National Monetary Fund and stuff. So you got to depend on other folks to even say what you're worth. That's why, you know, I say, hey, if they want to leave and start their own currency and different things, because that's where it starts at, you know, with Pan-Africanism. Is we have to get away from what may be the everyday standard, and we may have to set our own standards. You know, if Alexander Hamilton came up with the Wall Street and the stock market years ago, then why can't we come up with something just as great, you know, where African countries can trade and have their own central bank where they can process money? You know, it's just unbelievable that we depend on certain markets, you know, to determine our fate. When will we, as a people of color, you know, step away from the everyday, you know, of what's out there? Because stocks rise and fall every day. Billions and trillions are lost in the stock market, you know, at just a whim of information. So when will we start looking at something more concrete that we can start building our futures on, independent of what someone else is saying? You know, if gold is worth, we'll say $500 an ounce today, it should be worth $500 an ounce 2 months from now. You know, but it doesn't work that way because of the inflation, you know, of how companies trade. So we have to find a better solution to what's going on. Because I hate playing the market. I hate playing bonds. I hate all of it because you can lose a fortune. Lose a fortune. You lose everything that you have in just a couple of hours of trading. So none of this stuff is safe or secure. But then the minerals, the gold, you know, the precious minerals, those things will be here. But this paper money and these bitcoins and all this other stuff that you can't put your hands on, that will evaporate and pass by you, and you will lose a fortune trying to invest in it. So we have to come up with some better solutions, you know, as a people, and get up with the African nations and maybe come up with a better system of banking world currency. Zimbabwe, this is pretty much near the end for them. You know, they ain't got too many more choices. So I hope it works. I don't have a lot of faith in it, but I hope it works. But no way in the world do I have faith, because I cannot trust the American dollar. I do not trust the stock market. So there's nothing there for me to trust, not when people can lose billions of dollars, you know, in a day's time. I just can't see it. And I turn it back to you.
Thank you, Brother Alex. Call us 6057 as we talk about this new currency in Zimbabwe. One, the issue that comes up that reminds me of the situation in Guinea, when Guinea was fighting for their independence from France, and the great decision that Secretary Ray made in terms of a policy, which was, we should never let our economic control our politics or dictate our politics. Our politics should always dictate our economic. One of the concerns I have in Zimbabwe and this new currency issue is that it seems to me that they begin to let their economy dictate their politics. And we know there are different ways how you can fight a war to take and steal what you want. And if you can create a currency based on gold but still make American dollars the major standard of trade, that just seems another way of giving the people resources to the West and to the enemy. Your response, caller 6057.
It is indeed. Let's see. I agree with the idea that your currency should be based on your production, which is the way it is in the European countries and the U.S. It's based on production, but it should be based on the Zimbabwe's currency should be backed by Zimbabwean production and not another foreign currency. And this is a trap that an economic trap that Zimbabwe is falling into again, which Brother Alex alluded to earlier. And let's see, the solution is Pan-Africanism, the total liberation and unification of Africa under scientific socialism. Any other measure that does not tend toward African unification is a dead end. It leaves us in the same trap of neocolonialism and imperialism. And so actually, Zimbabwean currency, for it to be effective, must be backed by African labor. And they must make greater efforts to unify with other African countries.
Thank you, caller. Right now, you're listening to Africa on the Move. We're discussing part one of a two-part series, News from Africa and Abroad. What we're going to do right now, we're going to take a station break, and when we come back, we have a message to the community from Brother Alex, and then we're going to talk about how you can support MPH Radio. This is the voice of MPH Radio, and we'll be right back. Today's date is the 3rd of April, 2024. MPH Radio is bringing you this message because if you don't have information, you cannot think. Let's take the station break, and we'll be right back. This is MPH Radio.
I don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man.
You are an African.
None of mine your nationality. You have got the identity.
You are an African.
I don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man.
You are an African.
Now mind your nationality, you have got the identity.
You are an African.
Cause if you come from Trinidad, and if you come from Nassau, and if you come from Cuba, don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man. Not my denomination, that is only segregation. Cause if you go to the Catholic, and if you go to the Methodist, and if you go to the Church of God, I don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man,
you are a happy man.
Not my new complexion, there is no rejection.
You are a happy man.
Only depression high. I don't care where you come from, as long as you're a black man. Now mind your nationality, you will guide the identity.
You are
That's right, you're listening to Peter Tosh, African. No matter where you come from, whether you're a black man, black woman, you're African. Welcome back to MPH Radio. And for fairness and disclosure, I would like to apologize to our listening audience for making an error. And one of the things we learned from the Chinese struggle is that if you make an error and you fail to correct it, then there are two errors you have made. We'd like to apologize for disclosure reasons. I must admit to you as the voice of MPH on our Blog Talk Radio Network family members. We have many sister stations that we work with and that I work with. So Africa on the Move is one of them, and you can listen to it every Sunday evening at 7 p.m. Eastern Time by dialing 323-679-0841 or go to Blog Talk Radio platform and type in Africa on the Move. So that's for disclosure purposes and for fairness. We want to correct this particular, and we want to let you know it is by Saturday, every other Saturday at 1 p.m. You can listen to Missing Pages of History Radio, in which we call MPH Radio. And our next program will be April to 27th at 1 p.m. And for those who are living in the Richmond metropolitan area, please check out their throwback television program that comes on Comcast on channel 95 at 1 a.m. on the weekends, Fridays, Saturdays, and Sundays. And you can also check out it on channel 36 at the Verizon Cable Company. So please tune in, be supportive. And if you'd like to make a donation to MPH Radio, you can do that as well by doing it to Zelle at Missing Pages of History 1 at yahoo.com, or send your check or money order to Missing Pages of History, Inc., P.O. Box 27782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. We thank you. We need your support. You can come and join our membership by emailing us at mphradio@yahoo.com, and let's build this institution, because it's an institution for the people, for underserved community. And it's an institution that's needed, because if we don't tell our story, who will? So at this point in time, in closing, we'd like to come back to Brother Alex. He has a message to the community, and then we'll close out with our final statement on behalf of Missing Pages of History Radio, MPH Radio. Brother Alex, welcome back. What is your message to the community today? Brother Alex, the mic is yours.
Well, first of all, I want to congratulate you again for this wonderful show. With Susan's contribution and Mrs. Charles and Stan Africa, we had a time here today. And the callers have really, you know, contributed a lot. And so on that note, I would like to say one thing that you impressed me, because that was what I'm going to talk about, you know, longevity and longevity of this indenture thing that you developed, Mr. Lee, and bringing forth to this community to give us this information. So longevity has its place. April is a special month. My brother Krekor was born on the 5th, and I was born on the 20th. It was a happy time of birthday celebrations, church gatherings, celebrating Easter Passover traditions, and egg hunts with flowers blooming from the spring rains. It was a wonderful time of year. My father would begin to plant his gardens, and we, as children, would be up early to help him with the seeding process. We would have a magnificent garden of corn, tomatoes, okra, turnips, cabbage, string beans, peas, lima beans, potatoes, spinach, onions, peppers, squash, cantaloupes, and watermelons, and even more. My father was teaching us, his sons and daughters, to plant seeds of longevity in one's life, as mentioned in the King James Version of the Bible in Genesis chapter 3, verses 17 through 19. And unto Adam he said, because thou hast hearkened unto the voice of thy wife and hast eaten of the tree of which I commanded thee, saying, thou shalt not eat of it. Cursed is the ground for thy sake. In sorrow shalt thou eat of it all the days of thy life. Thorns and thistles shall it bring forth to thee, and thou shalt eat the herb of the field. And the sweat of the face shalt thou run into the ground, for out of it wast thou taken. For dust thou art, and dust shalt thou return. I heard this sermon over the years by many, but only Dr. King made me understand the longevity of life. Dr. King's masterpiece interpretation of this Bible verse was given on a windy, stormy, and rainy night on April 3rd, 1968, at the Mason Temple in Memphis, Tennessee. As he rose from his hotel bed with the sickness of an oncoming goal, he answered the call to do God's will with one last time, to inspire his people as Moses had done in the biblical days. King said, you must continue without me over the mountain and to the valley of freedom, justice, and equality. He told of the many attempts on his life that had happened over the years and seemed to foretell that he would not see the longevity in his life. He must have felt the end was near. Yes, longevity has its place. I have been home from school for about 3 hours, and outside in my father's garden, I was pulling and hoeing weeds from the vegetable plants and soon would be bare produce to eat and can. I loved to work in the garden. I just hated the bees and worms that always seemed to be around. I knew they had a job to do, but why couldn't they do it while I was sound asleep in bed at night? It was warm that day, and I was sweating pretty good, and I was working hard to make Dad proud. I heard the big old time clock go off from the nearby fire station for 6 p.m., and I walked back to the house to watch the news. Usually at school, we might be asked about major stories were broadcast the night before. Before I got to my house, my mother's sister, Aunt Ella, was running towards me crying and shouting, "They killed Dr. King!" As a child, I knew who Dr. King was, but who killed him and why? And she was in a very hysterical state, and I walked in her into the house where I saw tears from my mother also. I watched the sisters embrace as I went to look for my grandma Bessie, who I'd never seen cry, and who was sitting in her chair watching the news. It was traumatic as CBS anchor Walter Cronkite gave the details. Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., the apostle of nonviolence in the civil rights movement, has been shot dead in Memphis, Tennessee. Police have issued an all-points bulletin for a well-dressed young white man seen running from the scene. Officers also reported chased and fired on a radio-equipped car containing two white men. Dr. King was standing on the balcony of a second-floor hotel room tonight when, according to a companion, a shot was fired from across the street. In the friend's word, the bullet exploded in his face. Police, who have been keeping a close watch over the Nobel Peace Prize winner because of the turbulent racial situation, were on the scene almost immediately. They rushed the 39-year-old Negro leader to a hospital where he died of a bullet wound to the neck. So at that point, I could take no more myself, watching and hearing Mr. Cronkite. I ran over to my grandmother and collapsed into her arms. She held me tight and told me, "Don't worry, nothing's bad going to happen to my grandchild." I remember her wet tears landing on top of my head as she seemed to have held me forever. I could still hear my aunt hollering in distraught, asking, "What are we going to do now?" The cruelty of America had raised its head once again. The night before, on April 3rd, 1968, it was reported that Dr. King had given one of the best speeches ever. Why did this have to happen to such a good young man? As the wind and rain pounded the city of Memphis, there was a calm at the center of the storm at the Mason Temple. The singing and praising of the Lord had gone on for hours. The crowd was uneasy, and they wanted to hear from the main speaker. He was why they were here. Reverend Abernathy was worried as he and Jesse Jackson could not hold the crowd any longer. Dr. King was the only one they needed to hear from. They wanted to hear God's plan to go forward from their leader. So Abernathy called Dr. King, who was sick at the Lorraine Hotel. "Doc, they want you." Tired, sick, and looking worn out, Dr. King made it to the Mason Temple. He approached the crowd with a new vigor, gaining strength in his faith. He talked about the unity of his people and their organizations. He challenged the injustices being done to the sanitation workers and why he supported them and why he had to support their cause. He spoke of the economic actions that the people must consider. He talked of more boycotts and sit-ins to get equality where there was none. He reminded the crowd to continue to use nonviolent protest so the media knew that they were not thugs and brutes like those who wielded the batons and fire hoses. And he challenged the United States government and its citizens to live up to his own constitutional ideas and values. Also, he asked for America to stand by its own creed of justice and opportunity for all citizens. Finally, at the end, he spoke of the possibility of an untimely death. For 39 years, the seeds of freedom had been planted by his father and changed his name from Michael to Martin Luther. The garden had grown, and now the produce of goodness was for the entire world to see. Well, I don't know what will happen now. We got some difficult days ahead. But it really doesn't matter with me now, because I've been to the mountaintop, and I don't mind. Like anybody, I would like to live a long life. Longevity has its place, but I'm not concerned about that now. I just want to do God's will, and he has allowed me to go up to the mountain, and I've looked over, and I've seen the promised land. I may not get there with you, but I want you to know tonight that we, as a people, will get to the promised land. So I am happy tonight. I'm not worried about anything. I'm not fearing any man. Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord. The last preached words of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., April 3rd, 1968. Yes, longevity has its place, but doing God's will was the plan. Thank you, family. And thank you, Mr. Lee.
We'd like to thank Brother Alex for expressing his thoughts and his views. And we say all views expressed by our guests or presentations on the segment was on presentation on what's going on in your community or a message to the community are no views solely of that particular author. And not necessarily the views of MPH Radio, its associates, or any of its members. So we'd like to thank Alex for his participation today on Part 2 News from Africa and Abroad. We'd like to thank our special guests, Eugenia Charles and Pan Africa, as they share their understanding and giving us their update on Haiti and the Mamiya movement, as well as we'd like to thank the content makers of Zimbabwe New Currency, which you can view on YouTube. And of course, we'd like to thank you, the listening audience, who allow us to come to their homes this evening to speak to the powerful and the powerless. We say at MPH Radio that without information, you cannot think. We use information as a tool to help build our community. And we come to ask you at this point in time to support the work of MPH Radio by making a donation by Zelle at Missing Pages of History 1 at yahoo.com. Or you can send your check, a check on my order to Missing Pages of History, Inc., P.O. Box 27, 782, Richmond, Virginia, 23261. And more importantly, you can email us any views or comments, or you'd like to join our support group. You can do that by emailing us at mphradio@yahoo.com. Remind all our listeners that if you are in the area or the Richmond metropolitan area, in the state of Virginia, please check out our weekly weekend TV program, Mr. Pages of History, that comes on Comcast Cablevision, Channel 95, and Verizon, Channel 36 at 1 a.m. on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday evenings. So until next time, remember that if we don't fill in our missing pages, who will? We must tell our story. This has been Part 1, News from Africa and Abroad. We see you in 2 weeks. Please spread the word. Help increase our viewership and listenership by sharing our link with your friends, your family members, and your network. Until next time, we see you on 27 at 1 p.m., and we also encourage you to help support our sister station, such as Africa on the Move, to come on Sunday evening at 7 p.m. And you can reach out and listen to them by dialing 323-679-081 or you can listen to our other sister stations, such as New Day of Liberation and Resurrection and Liberation, Sister Empress Chi. And you can dial that and listen to that station by dialing, if I can find a number for you, just hold up. The number is 319-527-6189. Let's support one another and share this information. So again, remember, without information, you cannot think. Until next time, this has been the voice of MPH Radio, and we leave you with Alicia Keys to let you know that MPH Radio is here for all of us. We'll see you in 2 weeks. This has been MPH Radio. We thank you. Y'all, let's come to your homes again. Now, I'm inviting you.
This is